Today's Mishnah in Masechet Kelim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, brings us to the 26th Perek in Kelim. Woo-hoo. This is quite amazing. Looks like Kelim and Shabbos are going to end on the same day. Okay, so now we want to talk about the way in which you can have Kelim that are innately flat, and yet they become a kli by virtue of the fact that they're used as a container by being tied in the end. So there's a lot of things like that. How about an imki sandal? Now, all of you know what an imki sandal is. Well, in case you don't, an imki sandal is a piece of leather that is just a simple flat piece of leather. Now, all you do to it is you put around the outside of it, you put these little holes, you got a hole stamper, and then you take one of those things that you get in camp when you were a kid, you know, those little plastic ties, you put them through the holes, in and out, and then you tie them up around your shoe, and you've got yourself a sandal, right? So that closes a flat piece of leather, turns it into a sandal. Or if you've got a kisel shnatzot, how about if you've got a purse that is also really just a flat, but this is very common, by the way, when they sell jewelry, they sell it in these kind of things. It's a flat piece of soft leather, and then they put these loops on it through which you put a little string and you tie it, and it's usually got the name of the store on the outside of the leather. That creates a little pack for the jewelry, but it's really a flat piece of leather. It just creates a pouch. So these have a special din, and Rabbi Yehuda says this special din we're going to talk about is also true about a kvifa mitzrit, because a kvifa mitzrit, remember also when we're talking about how to make the kvifa mitzrit, we're talking about you start with these, with the dekel, with the palm, and you make it, you spread it out flat in this circular form. And then when you get to the edge, you've got this piece that you put in that is strong, and it pulls the whole thing together by putting pressure on the top of it. It's the same idea. It turns it into a base kibble by making it a basket by pulling something that was flat up. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, this is also true of the lutki sandal, not only of the sandal that we spoke about before, the imki sandal, but it's also true of the lutki sandal. The lutki sandal, the difference between them is the reason Rabbi Yehuda spoke about specifically a kvifa mitzris, which ought to just be true, obviously, according to anybody. If you're telling me that the din is true about a kishel shnatzos, why wouldn't it be true about the kvifa mitzris? So actually what's happening in this Mishnah is that we are presenting cases of increasing complexity in terms of the engineering. It's much more difficult to get a kvifa mitzris to be properly formed, and you need a certain amount of expertise to do that. And this lutki sandal is even more complex, and most people wouldn't be able to do it. And so because of that, each case, the Tanakhama is saying only something that any kid could do is considered to have a base kibble like this. Rabbi Yehuda says even something that's a little difficult, but it's easy to learn. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is saying even the lutki, which requires like a real mumcha to be able to make, is also considered to be the same din, which is what? What's the din? Okay, so, I mean, normally we would say that something that doesn't have a beit kibul, the halacha is that it can't become tamei. Over here, the question is this. If I have these strings that I put through them, we spoke about shnatzot, and that's exactly what we're talking about over here today when we talked about the sarbal, the chuta sarbal. That's what this Mishnah is really referring to. So these are like these drawstrings. So if their drawstring is there and it's inside, I understand that essentially makes it a container. But what would be the din if they no longer have the strings. So then they go back to just being a flat piece of leather, and that is not going to be mekabel tuma. And therefore, it will lose its tuma the moment that you take away its shame of a kli by taking out the strings. That would be the chiddush. So that is in all of those cases, they are mitam'im or mit-taharim. Mit-taharim is the same as mit-taharim. So they can either gain the ability to be tameh or lose the ability to be tameh simply by taking the chut in and out of them. And that does not require professional. Shaloba Oman. So if anybody who puts in the string is going to be able to make it Roy Lekabel Tuma. Anybody who takes out the string, it's going to be no longer Roy Lekabel Tuma, which is a very unusual type of situation. And the question is this a more general din? Omer of Yossi, I don't understand. Why is this limited to the specific cases that you just listed over here? Isn't it a normal halacha that kol hakelim are mitamim umitarim shelo bo'oman? I mean, you're not telling me anything specific about this. Any kli that can be made into a kli, since when did we ever hear of a din of needing a professional to make a kli? I don't know what you mean. There never is a halakh of there being a difference between a mumcha or a non-mumcha in the din of Tumah v'Tayra. Now, I think, says Rabbi Yossi, that you guys are getting confused. I agree. I was also mekabel from my Rebbe that there is a specific halakha for these unique kalim that use drawstrings in leather, but it's not what you said. It's this, that elu, even mutarin meaning here that they got untied, even though they got untied completely, meaning you took out the strings, the chiddush here is that even that is still able to be mekabel tuma. That's what it said, not what you said. And the reason is, and this is why we mentioned the difference between a professional and non-professional. Normally, the kli either is a kli or is not a kli, dependent on its current situation. And of course, that situation, it's irrelevant to me whether it's a professional or whether it's not a professional. Who cares? Is it a kli or is it not a kli? The chiddush over here is that even if you take out the string, the particular kalim that we listed here, any child can be put back in. And therefore, since I had yot yochol ha'chziram, it's so easy to put the string back in, they are not considered to be broken because you took out the string. And therefore, what you said was wrong. The only cases, lo amru, the only case where what you said would be right, that it actually loses its din of tuma if you take out the string, that was only by the kvifa mitzrit. And that was why we got into these differences. Because the kvifa mitzrit, you need a lot of expertise to be able to fix. Once that thing is flipped out, for you to be able to reinsert the heavy piece that's at the top, which you see in all of these kvifa mitzrit that you buy in the stores, you can't fix that unless you are really an expert in how to hold everything together as you're inserting it. Over there, if you took out the equivalent of the drawstring, which was the thick piece of straw that's at the top, or a fedeka that's at the top, that, in fact, since a hedyot cannot do it, there is where there's a nafkamina. That's where we got into the issue of the lutki and the kvifa mitzris, but certainly not as a general din, which would apply to any kli in the world. Mishnah Beit, and we were right up to a thing that we spoke about just now in Shabbos, which would be the type of covering that you make. We talked about literally this case where we were drawing something out of one rishus into the other, and the shnatzot. Remember, I told you that's going to be our next mishnah. Little did I think it was going to take that long. But the shnatzot remained in the other rishus. Okay, that's exactly what we're talking about now. A kis shel shnatzot. So what a kishel shnatzot, remember, is that we were talking about things that are essentially do not have a Beit Kibble. They're a flat piece of leather. And the thing that turns them into the Beit Kibble is that if you put a string through some holes around the outside, and then you pull the string tight, the whole thing turns into a pocket. That's the kind of thing that is used by jewelry sellers and so on. And it's like very fancy if it's really made out of leather. So if you have a kishel shnatzot, but you took out the shnatzot, even though you took it out, it's still going to be tame because it's just like taking out shoelaces. It's easy to be put in. And basically, now you'll remember that the last Mishnah, I hope you'll remember, the last Mishnah that we learned was actually a machlokas about this issue, because what Rabbi Yossi had said is that even if you had a kish that you took out the strings, it can still become tame. But the Rabbanan argued. So now this seems to be like a stam Mishnah that is going like Rabbi Yossi. But we could be talking about, as the Rav explains, we could be talking about even Alibana Tanakama, and that what we're dealing with over here is where the shnatzot are permanently tied around on the top of the piece of leather. And now all you need to do is fit them through the various holes and then pull it tight. Whereas what the Tanakama was talking about is where there were only holes. And there they held. When you bring the strings, you put them back in. So then you'll be making it into a kli. But there's nothing about this particular piece of leather that makes it into a kli just because it has holes in it. So therefore, this could be going afilu aliba the rabbana. Now, suppose you took the piece of leather and you spread it out, and you did such a good job of spreading it out that over there, even if the strings are still there, it just looks like a flat piece of leather. It doesn't have even the folds in it that it used to have. Over there, it's completely tore. If somebody was tola alav et hamatlet milamatan, so let's say that somebody puts a little piece underneath, which is a patch that lifts up the bottom in such a way that clearly that piece was meant to be the bottom of a container that would then be pulled up, then it always looks like it has a base kibble, and therefore it never completely lost the base kibble. It retains the din of tumah that it had before, whether that's in terms of Kabbalah's tumah possibility or whether that's in terms of actual tumah. The din is always the same. Now, suppose you have, which is very common in women's purses, or for that matter, even in men's wallets, suppose you have a small pocket inside a larger purse, which is very common. You have a change purse in your wallet, or a woman's got her little purses on the side with the zipper on the side of the big purse. So now the question is, binogea, the issue of the Gezeirah d'Rabbanan that we were talking about in the last parak at such length, about Achorayim, V'tochu, Beit HaTzvi'a. So when you have one purse inside of another purse, so then if nitma echad mehem b'mashke lo nitma chaver, they're considered to be separate kelim, and because of that, any one of them that became tamei b'mashke d'rabbanan would not be metamei the other one. Okay, now we also use these kind of things for pouches around valuable coins. So a person would take a piece of leather, would put it around the coin, fold the leather around the coin, put it in his pocket so that the coins wouldn't be damaged, or if he's selling jewelry, so that the jewelry doesn't get lost. So over there, as long as it's being used, so then clearly it is a base kibble. So tsror hamargalit, so if you have something wrapped around a very expensive jewel, so there it is basically a base kibble. And the reason for this is that you never can really flatten it again, because they're very small things that are inside. They're kept folded around tightly for a long time, and they take the shape of whatever was in them. And if it's something that was wrapped around coins, over there, Rebbe Eliezer is metame. But the Chachamim say, look, coins, you always are opening and closing because you want to take it out to use your coins. So it's not really going to get that much folded into the shape of the base kibble. And because of that, we weren't gozer to call that a base kibble. Rabbi Eliezer says, well, okay, but there are times that you do that. So he holds that we were gozer on any type of thing that is used as a long-term wrap. Now, Perek Chavav, Mishnah Gimel. Now, how about protecting kelim? Now, leather is often used to protect. Either you'll wear it if you like to play football, you'll wear it around your knees, you know, or if you're a gardener, you'll wear it around your hands in order to avoid getting all cut up with thorns and stuff. And there's all types of different things like that. And remember that we learned earlier that even where those things can hold things, that the din is that if the main purpose of something is to protect you, itzules, whether it's itzule tino, if it's to protect you from getting dirty, or it's itzule from getting pricked by something, that is not called a base kibble. And it's not called a beged. It's called itzule tino. And therefore, people that are lokte kotsim, so let's say they are flower pickers, rose pickers, right? So they would put a kaf, that would be made out of leather to allow them to hold things without getting pricked in the palm. So that is considered to be tahor, because again, it's not a base kibble. How about a zone and a brachyar? Those are tame. Now a zone is basically a belt, and a brachya is, as the name implies, it's around the birkayim. So that's your knee pad that people would wear if they're kneeling for a long time and doing work on the ground, or they're playing football or whatever. So those things are tame, because they actually have a normal belt, a zone belt anyway, is going to have a little place for you to stick coins and credit cards into the belt. And the knee pads would generally be lined with some foam, or in those days with some cloth, so it had a base kibble for the cloth, so that would be considered to be a actual base kibble. Sharvulim, how about sleeves that are worn over your shirt in order to protect your arms from the clothing getting stuck in whatever you're working on? So the clothing was loose, so you would put on these leather sleeves to hold them on tight, and they would be obviously open on both ends, so you wouldn't be able to get them on your hand over your shirt. But since they have a concept that we had much earlier in the Masechet, and we've spoken about a number of times, itzuras kli. So there's a gzeira de rabbanan on kelim that may technically not be kelim, but they look so much like something that people relate to as kelim, either in terms of begodim or because they just have that complexity look that makes them look like an instrument that would be a kli. That tzuras kli is sufficient to give it a din of tumah d'rabbanan. And these are one of those ideas, because it looks like something that you wear, even though technically speaking, it really is a simple piece of leather without a base kibble. The ha-praklimin are tahorin. Praklimin, also very popular today, and that's headbands. So that's there in order to collect sweat or to keep your hair up and not get into whatever it is that you're doing. That is considered to be tor. They do not look like kalim. They look like bands. And kol beit etzbaot tahorot. Even if you're putting something around your fingers, and you'll say, okay, so that's considered to be a beit kibble, right? No. It's not considered, putting something over your fingers, it's not a beit kibul for your fingers. We had this way back, we had this actually in Shabbos, and we had this back early on in the Masechet. It's not considered to be a cover, but it might be a beged. Now, since over here, even though it says kol beit etzbaot, obviously it doesn't mean a glove that's meant to keep your hands warm and so on. I mean, that's a piece of clothing. It's talking about something that is there as protection. So those protective finger bands, even though they look like they have a container, those are not really meant as containers, and therefore they're tar, except for one case. And that's people that go around collecting kayets. Kayets means, normally it means the figs, but over here it means things that are growing all those little berries and stuff that you pick when you go out into the fields in the summer. And those are actually chayev. Why? Because it often is used when you don't have it. You come across like a really delicious bush that's got these og. The og is generally translated as sumac. So those little berries, we're going to put them. So what you do is you take off the gloves and you stuff them full of og. And since that was so often done, they're actually considered to be kalim for a base kibble for ogim. And if it tore, so then that would be the shear of tearing him. Ena mikabelet et rov ha'og. If most of a berry would already be sticking out, then it's no longer used for that. Now, it may still be a useful protection for your finger, but that's not going to give it a din of tuma. Moving on now to sandalim. So we have cases, obviously, the sandal gets us into the issue of tumas midras, because it's meant for you to be standing on. So let's say a sandal, shenifsika achat mioznav. So you've got like these two side flaps, right? You tie them or you clip them in the middle, which is standard for a sandal. I'm not talking about the ones that are permanently there, but that you put your foot through. I'm talking about the ones that you tie in front. So if one of the ears fell off, meaning the flap on the side, we call the ear, it still remains tome with tumas midras. And because you haven't lost, it's still going to be usable on some level, because you could actually put the string on that is anyway sticking out of the other one, or the buckle that's sticking out of the other one. You could just buckle it around the whole shoe if you needed to, if it fell off while you're on the road. So because of that, it remains tummy. And this is remains tummy, not like the case we had before, where you start replacing it piece by piece. We're wondering at what point it becomes a panim chadashas bolakan. Here we're not talking about that. We're talking even without any type of repair, it would be tummy because it's still usable in a pinch. The second one tore off, then obviously it's not usable. And even if you fixed it, it would not get its tuma back. Because if you replaced it, then you no longer can see it as the old sandal. It would now be a new sandal, because it's ponim chadosh zbolakan. And even though you say, but I could have used it, I could have put something around it, that doesn't matter. It won't be the same sandal. But as we saw earlier, there's a concept of something which was once tame, fully because of midras. When you have a piece that is repairing it, then that piece, when it's put on, comes into contact with the tumas midras, and therefore that piece, which will now define the clean, it will now become a maga midras. So because of that, it's only a rish on the tumas. So when the first ozen was torn, it had tumas midras. When I now put a new one there, that new piece became a rishon because it's in contact with the old sandal. That was tumas midras. Now, if the second one breaks, I've got a new sandal, yes, but the new sandal is connected to the new ozen, which is all one kli, and therefore the whole sandal becomes tameh as a rishon because of the din that everything that is mechuber to that which makes it a kli is also considered to be tameh. So we have this gradual change here. Ozen number one falls off, replace it with ozen number two, with ozen replacement one. Then ozen number two falls off, you replace it, then we get panim chadoshais. But when you replaced ozen number one, what happened was is that became that piece of leather now became tummy because of maga midras, so such that even when the kli itself loses its higher level of tuma, which would have affected that ozen as well while it was still attached, but now the whole kli lost that level, then it retains the level from the first one. And because of that, now the whole kli is tame with the tuma of a maga midrash, which is a tuma's rishon. It's a concept that we've seen several times before of the gradual transference of what was previously a higher status of tuma to an attenuated state of tuma in the ponim chadoshas. Now, suppose you did not get around to fixing the first flap, the ozen that fell off, before the second one fell off and made it unusable. What about over there? So in that case, then it becomes completely tar, because there never was a time that you had a kli that was able to hold the tuma of the maga, the tumas midrash. Again, a concept we spoke about before. Now, suppose the heel fell off. This doesn't mean the heel, the akev that we normally refer to, because a sandal doesn't really have a heel. It refers to the piece that comes up in the back of those kind of sandals that have a back flap and that support your foot from the back as well. So if that tore off, or there's sandals that have a piece at the toe where you put the front of your foot in, or if the toe part fell off or it split, so now it won't hold your toe, at that point it's tore because it will not stay on your foot. Now we're talking about a different type of sandal that fits because you slipped through it. A sol yam shenifsak mikomako is tore. So a sol yam is basically a type of slide-on single piece of leather that you then tie with these cords going up around your ankle. Any tear kills that, and it would be tar. It won't stay on your foot. How about a shoe made out of soft leather that was nifchat, it tore? If it can't hold most of your foot, so that the top was torn, your foot is really comes out, now you're going to have to tie it in with something, that is considered to be tar. I mean, al sha'al ha'imum. And if you've got, remember the imum that we had, right? This is back on Shabbos as well. You have a shoe that's on top of the shoe. I forgot what we called it there. It's like this form that's shaped like a shoe. I forgot what the word is. It'll last? We had a perfect word for it. Now I forgot what it's called. But anyway, so it's on the imum and it's been finished. It's like a completely finished shoe. Does it already have a din before you remove it from the imum? Is it considered to be a kli, or is the final step the removal from the imum, and that's what makes it into a kli? So Rabbi Eliezer, indeed, he holds there's no makab patish, it's not finished. While it's on the imum, it's still in its raw format. Whereas the Chachamim say, the moment that the work is done, it's now able to be makabal tuma. Kol chamatot trurot tohorot, any of the type of bottles, meaning a leather flask that is used for liquid, now that is much more sensitive. So what you would do in that case where you get a hole somewhere, what you would do is obviously you would just tie it. And that way the liquid wouldn't get down to the point where the hole is. But that is definitely not a long-term solution, because of that, it's not considered to be really fixing it to be a usable kli, even if today it'll save your water. Chutz mishel arvim, unless you're talking about the Arab knots, which they do in a way that they really just keep there, they're permanent and they're not able to be easily untied. Rabbi Meir Omer, etzror sha'a torot. So temporary knots are tohor, even if it's an Arab knot. And it's Ror Olam Tmeot, sounds a little bit like our Shabbos Sugya today. If it's a permanent kind of knot, and that is meant to stay there, that even if it's not an Arab knot, that makes it a kli. And Rabbi Yossi says, a knot is never considered to be a solution. I don't care what kind of knot it is, because the way that you really solve these problems is by re-sewing the leather in order to make a flask that is a real flask, not this piece of garbage where you need to keep a knot around the hole, for heaven's sakes. And because of that, we do not see it as a real repair at all, and it will lose its tumah, will not be able to be mekabel tumah.